available in more homes than the Pac-12 Network, we are the Podcast of Champions. Fight! I'm David Woods from Bruin Report Online.
And here he goes, Miles Jack.
And I'm Ryan Abraham from USCFootball.com.
Liner going to try to sneak it ahead. Touchdown, SC!
We are the Podcast of Champions. Welcome, everybody, back to the Podcast of Champions. I'm David Woods from Bruin Report Online, the UCLA site of the Scout.com network.
And I'm Ryan Abraham from USCFootball.com, the USC site on the Scout.com network. And we are the Podcast of Champions. If you want to get a hold of us, our website is Pac12Podcast.com. You can also tweet us at Pac12Podcast, email us Pac12Podcast@gmail.com. If you want to give us a voicemail, give us a call, 641-715-3900, extension 734. 972. We can subscribe on iTunes. It's a great way to consume the program and leave us some positive feedback. Dave, I haven't checked our iTunes mentions and feedback lately. Hopefully we got some good reviews in there.
Yeah, we've been pretty good for a while. I want to say we had something like 30-ish reviews.
Okay.
Pretty heavily five-starred, as it should be.
Yes.
I would think. I'm going to pull it up right now.
Check it out.
The people need to know. We have 42 ratings and a perfect 5-star rating.
Pretty good. I like it.
That's not bad.
No.
That pays the bills, so to speak, if this actually paid any bills whatsoever, if it actually made even the slightest ounce of money.
It creates some bills.
It creates some bills. It creates, kind of.
Time, whatever.
Yeah, there's a value to time.
Sure.
Time's finite, so you can assign a monetary value to it.
Yeah. Well, how was your weekend of college football?
It was good. Enjoyed watching a lot of games, actually. Wasn't anticipating it being a good weekend, but it ended up being, I think the Pac-12 was maybe light on super enjoyable stuff over the weekend, though there were a couple of good games. But I thought college football as a whole was pretty fun this weekend.
Yeah, it was pretty good. I tried to focus on the Pac-12 stuff. I had to watch a little Ole Miss. I wanted to see Ed Orgeron, what he was doing there. My wife and I actually, because USC was on a bye, and Tennessee, a team that she follows, was on a bye. So we ended up going out to the Palm Springs area out in Indio and just kind of renting a little casita and hanging up by the pool and watching some games. So it was a kind of relaxing weekend. We got to consume some college football, do a little grilling, and have some fun. Didn't have to worry about covering a game, Dave. It was kind of nice.
Yeah, I really appreciated it when I tweeted at you, hey, how about this game or whatever, and you're like, oh, I'm sorry, I'm by the pool. They only have this one game on. And I'm like, oh, okay. Bastard.
Yeah. We did have an outdoor TV. We were watching out there. But sometimes in the jacuzzi, Dave, I was watching from the hot tub, so sometimes it's hard to see, a little glare.
Oh, I hear you. It's a tough life. It's a tough light out there at Palm Springs.
I love the desert, man. It's kind of I love the beach more, but it's fun to go to the desert every once in a while and just kind of chill.
I'm more of a mountains forest kind of guy, as you might imagine.
With the beard? Yeah, I get that.
Yeah, it gets sandy if I go on the beach,
But yeah, I thought it was pretty good overall. Some surprising. There's a little controversy with our picks this week. So I need to address this now. We'll bring it up. Because we didn't have a line for UCLA, Utah, that was the only game.
I was going to bring this up, Ryan. So.
Oh, you were? Okay.
Yeah.
Whatever you decide is fine. But I picked Utah. We thought it was a pick'em. I picked Utah. You picked UCLA. But then the line came out and UCLA was favored by like a touchdown. And so we were like, well, we did the show on Monday. Can we change our picks? I wasn't sure what to do. I thought we should probably ask the tweeps and stuff. But what are your thoughts on this whole situation?
Well, I think my fundamental issue is that I made the grim, awful mistake of picking UCLA to win the game. So regardless of our text message later in the week that obviously had us both taking Utah and the points, Utah plus 7 was an obvious pick there. I think you've got to get the point here and I take the loss.
Okay.
I think that's only fair.
But to be fair, once you found out that UCLA, you were going to have to give up, we could have kept the pick the same, whatever pick them, but once it was a 7-point swing, then you were like, no, I would take Utah plus 7.
Right. So just know in your hearts, listeners, that I was right against the spread. but I'm willing to take the L here.
Okay. So it wasn't a great week for us either way. That would put you at 1-3-1, and I was 2-2-1. We'll get into the games because I think there was some, I feel like we were on the right side of things, and then like there were some decisions by Chris Peterson that maybe put us on the wrong side. Things like that happening. Like I felt like we sort of knew what was going to happen in the games, but the lines didn't work out. That happens sometimes. That's when you're betting on the point spread, that definitely can happen, especially big point spread numbers.
Yeah, for sure. And we'll get to, recapping these games, but yeah, there were a couple that felt like they could have easily gone a different way if teams had kept the foot on the gas, so to speak.
Well, we do have some questions. We'll get to those at the end. We're going to do our week 8 recap, and then we'll do our week 9 preview. Then we'll answer some of your questions. So let's jump right in, I guess, Dave. The most exciting game, I guess you could say, if you like offense, was Friday night, Oregon and Cal. That was a pretty crazy one.
This was tons of fun. This was, so Oregon lost 52-49 in overtime. Oregon's now, just let's get this out of the way, they're now 2-5 and 0-4 in the Pac-12. But this game was bonkers. Cal was up 31-14 at half. Seemed like they had it in hand, especially with the way Oregon's played this year, where they haven't really been at, in years past when you would watch Oregon, you would always say, oh, they might be down at the half or they might be close to the half, but they're going to turn it on in the second half and just blow them away. That hasn't really happened this year, but in this game, it actually kind of did. They scored 28 in the second half. Cal only scored 11, and that pushed it to overtime. But this was tons of fun. Cal's offense was obviously spectacular. Davis Webb was great, even though he had a hurt hand. Their rushing attack, which has been actually secretly good all year. And people keep talking about Cal having a bad rush offense. Not the case. And it hasn't been the case really all year. But Oregon, I mean, Justin Herbert's a guy. I mean, he's a guy who's going to be pretty good down the road. And he had a really nice second half, but this is just back and forth. And it was, honestly, I mean, as much as it kind of is fun from a Schadenfreude standpoint to always root against the Pac-12 powers from the last 5 years, it was nice to see Oregon get competitive in the second half. It wouldn't have been, it's not fun to see them just get blown out by 30 points every game. So it was nice to see them fight back, make it to overtime, and then ultimately lose.
This was longer than the Dodgers game. I mean, I went to the whatever game. I think it was game 4. I went to the Thursday game in LA. I guess that was game 5. And, I'd only been to one other Dodger game all year, and it was a Kershaw, 1-0 hour and 55 minute game. This one was more than twice as long as the other game I went to. It was so long. And then this game was even longer than that. How crazy it was. Cal had a chance to win. Their great kicker misses a game winner at the end of the game to go into overtime. I thought that was kind of weird. And I feel, Dave, that I jinxed all of our listeners and the entire Pac-12, the whole West Coast, to be honest, when we started talking about, there's not as many flags in the Pac-12 lately. And holy crap, maybe they heard that and they did. Now there's just like a flag fest. They were all over the place, but there wasn't a lot of defense, as you could see with the score the way it was. And one of the plays that kind of epitomized this game, I think it was in the second quarter. Cal's up 21-7. It's fourth down, in their own territory, and they just go for it and get it easy. It's I think they kind of got the feeling, Dave, that you're going to have to score a lot of points. So they didn't feel all that comfortable being up 21-7. So yeah, our own territories, go for it on fourth down. Who cares? We'll get it. And it was just an offensive, explosion on both sides.
Well, and frankly, Oregon was somewhat lucky to be that close. I mean, yeah, they scored 49 points, but if you look at the numbers from this one, I mean, Cal dominated this game, 200 more yards. And it was really just kind of lucky that Oregon was even in it at the end. So to your penalty point, the two teams combined for 28 penalties. 279 yards of penalties.
Wow.
That, if this game hadn't been so fun on offensively, it would have been unwatchable.
If that was if it was 28 attempts for 279 yards or whatever, that's a pretty good quarterback rating, right? Like
Yeah, that's. Yeah. I mean, that would be pretty close to what Joe Williams did to UCLA, but we'll get to that in a second.
Yeah, it was kind of crazy. You know, Cal was running the ball. It wasn't just Davis Webb too. They were running the ball in chunks. Oregon was playing like a 4 or 5 man front a lot. They had like 5 men in the box. They're backing all these guys off, and Cal, to their credit, just kept kind of running through them. You know. So, and, you know, and then they start playing off and Cal would just play some pitch and catch. And there was times in this game, Dave, where I was like, Oregon should never throw a pass again because they were running the ball really well. So, it wasn't just like an air raid sort of thing where you see Oklahoma, Texas Tech. I mean, there was a lot of good run plays in this one too.
Yeah. No, this was a lot of fun from both sides. I thought, I mean, Cal and Washington State are very much evolving. You know, both teams are running the ball quite a bit more this year than they have in the past. I think they're starting to recognize that one-dimensional pass-only kind of offense is not working particularly well. You know, maybe doesn't suit you as well anymore. So here's a funny stat. Oregon ran 85 offensive plays in this one. Cal ran 118.
Some sort of record, I believe.
Yeah, 61 passes and 57 runs. I would have to imagine if they'd gotten 3 more runs and, you know, had the 61 passes, that would have been a record, 60 and 60. That would have been. I can't imagine another team having done that. This might be a record of itself. You know, 61 passes, you know, to have both your pass attempts and your rush attempts over 55. Somebody look it up. Do it.
And I thought I read that the 118 play total plays was an NCAA record, so that I guess that would be, unless, well, there'd probably be, it could be distributed differently, but
yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that would be tough. But yeah, I mean, crazy game. Cal, you know, gets some momentum in this one, and Oregon still trying to find it, Dave. They're gonna have to, they host Arizona State this weekend. We'll talk about that later on, but they need to try to get a win somehow, because this Ofer in the Pac-12 and staying down the bottom, especially down the bottoms of the, near the bottom of the Podcast of Champion Power rankings. It's not sitting well in Eugene.
No. I can't imagine it is, but, you gotta win some games.
Yeah. All right. Yeah. Okay. So we go from that offensive explosion to kind of a baffling game for me. This was on the Pac-12 networks, Colorado and Stanford, 10-5, Colorado wins this one.
So one thing we could not have gotten more wrong in our previous show, and a few Utah fans actually called us out for this on Twitter. I think I said, I'm not going to throw you under the bus by saying we, but I said I would much rather watch the Colorado-Stanford game than the Utah-UCLA game, and the biggest upset in the world would be if the Utah-UCLA game was exciting. And the converse was that Colorado-Stanford would be exciting. This game finished 10-5. Colorado beat Stanford 10-5, and the safety that they took was pretty much just so they could punt, or pretty much just like so they could bleed a little bit more clock off. This was the beyond ugly. Colorado missed like 3 field goals in this game. Just disgusting football. But Colorado won, and they're bowl eligible, and that's really the story we should take from this.
Yeah, and we did get a question. I could read it now if you want, or
yeah, go for it.
Let me pull it up here.
Only once.
Yeah, so this was from Greg. He said, I just listened to the Week 8 preview and had a quick observation. Obviously, Week 8 has already passed, so I have the advantage of hindsight. That being said, I couldn't help but chuckle when you were previewing the UCLA-Utah game. Dave was so bummed out to be forced to watch this low-scoring, quote-unquote, stinker of a game instead of a much more exciting Colorado-Stanford tilt. I believe Dave even speculated that it would be the upset of the century if that game was exciting.
Utah. So we've had the upset of the century now.
Yes. He said Utah 52, UCLA 45, 1,049 yards combined total offense. Colorado 10, Stanford 5, 532 yards combined total offense, less than Utah alone. Man, I'm glad the dumb things I say don't get recorded for all the world to hear. Sorry, Dave. Just thought that was funny. Keep up the good work, guys, and go Utes. And then he said, actually, I suck at math. Colorado, he wrote back. Colorado and Stanford combined for 622, not 532. Yeah. I guess it's kind of funny.
You
that
feel tough now.
Funny to email when I poke fun at Dave for having recorded audio of him getting wrong. I go ahead and send an email getting something wrong. Feel free to point that point and laugh, Dave.
Oh, no, no. I'm used to being very wrong. Very wrong a lot of the time. So it is completely, completely valid. This game was not exciting. I still flipped to it a few times because I am a not-so-secret Colorado fan now. So it was exciting to see them, you know, kind of hang on in a game where, you know, a lot went wrong. I mean, Sefa Lufau, if you watched, like, the first – I tried to watch – as much of this as I could. So I got like the first quarter live. He was way off, just missing wide open receivers, just bouncing balls into guys a ton. Just didn't look his usual self. I don't know if he's, you know, some lingering effects or of the injury or just, you know, one of those off games, but he didn't look so good. We got past that. They got past the three missed field goals and still beat Stanford on the road. And yeah, that's not such a big thing from two perspectives. First, beating Stanford on the road is never a big deal because Stanford Stadium is not necessarily the biggest home field advantage in the world. And Stanford obviously isn't great this year, but still doing that, getting to 6-2. I mean, don't look now, but Colorado is favored to win the Pac-12 South. Like they're, I think they're going to be favored in every remaining game, and they've got an easier road than either Utah, and USC's already a game behind, and they still have to play Washington. So if Colorado, you know, I think that Utah tilt at the end of the year is shaping up to be a pretty big one, but, I mean, they're in the driver's seat.
I agree, and it's funny, when you talk about the mistakes, Colorado could have won this by a lot more. Like, when I was writing my notes, I think probably I was in the hot tub for this one day watching the thing, but I would put little notes in my Google Doc. And they're always like, Colorado screwed this up. So they missed two field goals. They end up getting a late interception and they go for it on 4th-and-2 and get it. And then they end up having to kick a late field goal anyway. They kick the ball out of bounds. They drop an interception. Which I think they got an interception in the next play anyway. But there was just stuff like that. Like, man, they're screwing up again. They screwed that up. And it was still like Stanford couldn't take advantage. And they got the win, and it's rare for Colorado to get a win in the state of California. I think that's their third win in, 24 tries or something. I think they beat UCLA once. They beat Stanford now, and they had a win in the Holiday Bowl once. So it's been rough sledding for Colorado coming into the state of California. And it wasn't a pretty one, but I mean, Mike McIntyre tip the hat to him because he's done a really good job this year. And I thought he played, played a pretty good game against USC, almost won that one, was able to get a win against a struggling Stanford team. And that was a big win for the program. Beating Stanford and Oregon in the same season on the road. Like, okay, I'll take that if you're Colorado.
Oh yeah, it's crazy. And before the year, if you said 6-2 at this point in the year, it would have just been, no, that's not happening.
Right. But 2-6, right? Like 2-6. Yeah, no, they can still come back. No. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. No, we've been Buff believers here. For a while now.
We picked this one right. So this was Stanford was favored by two.
This was my one win.
Yeah, and we both got this right. I forgot to mention the Oregon Cal game was a 3-point spread, and it looked like, you know, Cal was going to cover for a long time, and they ended up getting tied, so that kind of stunk. But so that was our tie. So that was the one. Vegas got that one exactly right. So nothing we can do on that one. But this one, I think we've both felt pretty good about it, Dave, with Stanford being favored. I think we both felt Colorado was going to win the game.
Yeah, exactly. So, and honestly, they should have won by quite a bit more.
Yeah. Lots of mistakes, but leaving points on the table, but they get the win. That's what's important. This one was a Fox game, the one that was the upset of the century being exciting. Because it was Utah, number 19 Utah, 52 UCLA, 45.
So this one doubled or nearly doubled the over-under. That's how not expected this was.
Wow. So
UCLA, has struggled to run the ball all year, right? I think they're the worst rushing team in the country by some metrics. I think by total yardage for sure, but by some other ones as well. They threw the ball 70 times in this game. This is not an air raid offense, but they went full air raid in this one, and actually, there were no designed runs for the quarterback, Mike Faithful, but he still had 6 carries. So if you factor that into the pass attempts, they dropped back to pass 76 times in this football game. Let's just let that sink in for a second. That was more than Cal. I'm pretty sure it was more than Washington State this week. This was bonkers. And here's the crazy part. Josh Rosen was still out. They did this with Mike Faithful, their backup quarterback. So you would have expected this to be a disaster, but actually UCLA was able to generate some offensive, you know, yards. Faithful had 464 yards on his 70 attempts, which is, a decent enough air raid pass per attempt. But he also threw four picks and had a fumble lost. But honestly, the offense wasn't the issue. The defense picked this game to really, really struggle against the run. Utah, Joe Williams, retiree, ran for 332 yards on 29 carries. So when we joked earlier about the penalty yardage in that Oregon-Cal game amassing to a pretty good day for a player, Joe Williams did better than that, because that was 28 penalties for about 279 yards. This was 29 carries for 332 yards. So if he was competing against the penalty yardage in Oregon-Cal, he would have won.
I mean, the fact that he came out of retirement is the best. It's like all the AARP card jokes and things like that. Right. And basically, he didn't want to play anymore, whatever it was. I'm not exactly sure what the story was, but the fact that you come out and play is like, okay, that's nice he's coming out to play. But then you come out and like set a record is absolutely bonkers. So it just made this one even more crazy. I think Utah was lucky to have him. Obviously, it was a close game and stuff. Troy Williams, I think there's been some struggles and stuff there, but having him back and out of retirement and running the football well just seemed to give this team a spark. And I just haven't seen that kind of offense from Utah, I don't think, all year.
Yeah. And this was kind of Utah's had a bunch of these this year where it was kind of a gut check game, not in the sense that they had to come back in the fourth quarter because they were pretty much in control after, that initial flurry from UCLA, but that initial flurry from UCLA was 21 points in the first quarter, and this is a UCLA team that's really struggled offensively. So you can imagine Utah being a little taken aback by that. But then they went and had their pretty much best offensive performance of the season. That's kind of a do what is needed type thing. And, I think I've been underselling Utah a little bit because just not from a quality perspective, because I really like Whittingham as a coach and I really like a lot of their line talent, but just they've had so many injuries. But they just keep winning games. They just keep winning, kind of doing exactly what's needed to win games. And yeah, it might not always be, pretty blowouts or, those kind of laugher types games, but they're 7-1. They're 4-1 in conference. And, if they can take care of their business, we'll get to their game this week, which is going to be a tough one. But if they can take care of their business, it's setting up for a really fun rivalry game between Colorado and Utah that'll have some actual stakes at the end of the season. And that's a huge credit to Whittingham, huge credit to that team. The offense is maybe getting a little bit healthier, but that defense has been banged up, but this was a tough game going against an offensive tack that they did not prepare for in any real way. And honestly, I thought they did a credible job. Obviously, they gave up 500 plus yards of offense, but they got five turnovers. I thought they did well enough. And obviously well enough to win.
Do you not have the penalties in front of you? I mean, it seemed like Utah had a lot of penalties in this game. I don't know if there was a lot in this one as
Yeah, they were shooting themselves in the foot quite a bit in the first half. They cleaned it up a little bit more in the second half. It was 9 penalties for Utah for 103 yards and 3 for UCLA for 35 yards. So Utah decisively lost the penalty battle, but UCLA decisively lost the turnover battle, and turnovers matter a whole lot more than penalties.
Yeah. And the weird thing to me, because I was kind of flipping around, whatever, I think we're grilling, whatever, hanging out, like I said. But the Colorado-Stanford game, I believe, started at 12:30, and this one started at 1. Yeah. And it was like, this game was in halftime, and the Colorado-Stanford game was over. And I was like, I think I texted you like, Dave, what the hell is going on here? This is crazy. How's this
the
game
first
still?
Quarter alone, the first quarter alone was like an hour. I mean, wow. The two teams combined for 35 points in the first quarter, so that stands to reason. But this was a long game. It was almost a full 4 hours.
Wow.
That
was great. But, I didn't expect that from the UCLA defense. That's been such, they've been so solid all year. I thought that, if you put up that many points, there's no way I thought UCLA would have lost. You put up 45 points or whatever. But, I know that UCLA came into the season saying it wasn't going to be throwing the ball over the field. It's going to be tougher running the ball and things like that. But I like when a team is able to change like during a week, you know, just like, hey, we're going to do this week, even though that's not what we normally do for whatever reason, because Rosen's out or whatever it was. And you feel like it gives you the best chance to win and be able to execute it. And they were, I mean, they put up a whole bunch of points. So I don't think that's something that's easy to do. You know, you see people prepare all off season for months and months and they can't get the offense right. So be able to turn that around that quickly and be as good as it was, you know, it's, you know, there's not 100 yards rushing in the last three games total for UCLA, I don't believe. So you had to throw the football. So I at least give them props, Dave, for being able to say, hey, this is what we're going to have to do. We're going to have to throw the football 76 times or whatever to get a win here. And they gave it a shot.
Yeah, I mean, I applaud the creativity. I thought they needed to do something like that. I've been calling for it for a couple of weeks now. But maybe went a little overboard. Maybe could have thrown it 60 times and run the ball another 8. Because by the end of the game, I mean, Utah was like seriously like dropping defensive ends. Like they were not – they were committing about 4 or 5 guys to the box. So there were some favorable boxes, but – with the way UCLA's offensive line played, has played this year, I don't necessarily blame UCLA for even not running on a 5-man box because, frankly, UCLA's offensive linemen haven't been able to block 1-on-1 all year. So I get that. I think teams are going to be a little bit more prepared for UCLA to pass the ball that much going forward. So it's not going to be as maybe, you know, they startled Utah with those 21 points in the first quarter, but after that they scored 24 points spread over 3 quarters. So. I think it was a little bit diminishing returns after that first quarter. And I'm sure going forward, defenses are going to be a little bit more prepared, but that doesn't necessarily mean UCLA can't try something else new. You know, obviously this wasn't good enough to win. And you could make an argument that, you know, going up tempo and doing the all throwing offense and being a little bit inefficient, hurt the defense too. I mean, I don't buy that argument. I think they gave up 52 points because they definitely struggled with some things, but maybe that swung it a score one way or the other, but whatever the case, I think UCLA is still has to tinker a little bit offensively. I'm not sure throwing the ball 70 times with Mike Faithful is going to be the answer going forward.
Yeah. All right. Well, we'll see. The Bruins get a bye, and you just got a pretty big game this week, which we'll talk about in a little bit. Should we move on to the next game?
Yeah.
So next up, this was the most frustrating one of the weekend for me. I probably watched this the least. Oregon State heading to Seattle, number 5 Washington. The Huskies win 41-17.
Yeah, I mean, it was just one of those games where Washington, I mean, they never had to kick it into high gear, and so they just didn't. And it was really frustrating for us because we had Washington to cover like 36 points, and they very clearly did not do that.
It was like 31-0 and a half or something, right? I mean, it was something crazy.
Washington could have won this game by 100. Yeah. They didn't.
they chose not to.
Because that would have been cruel. And there's an elaborate theory going around that Chris Peterson is going to choose not to beat a single team this year by more than he beat Oregon. Just to kind of rub it a little bit more in Oregon's face.
Ooh, that's a good theory.
Would be so good if that's true. It would be so good. Yeah, I mean, I don't know how much to take from this because Washington kind of did the thing where they just, you know, like, did you have an older brother where they like put their hand on your forehead and you take swings at them, but you can't get them? That's kind of what Washington did. They just kind of held them at arm's length by putting their hand on their forehead. You know, they were fine. You know, Jake Browning was fine. You know, 14 of 28 for 3 touchdowns is a pretty pedestrian day for him, even though he had 10 yards plus per pass attempt. They ran the ball really well, but you know, they did exactly what they needed to do against this Oregon State team that really wasn't a threat to beat them at any point. Marcus McMarion's doing what he can, but he's not their starting quarterback. Threw a couple of picks, under 50% passing. They ran the ball okay. They didn't have Ryan Nall in this one. And, you know, that's an issue for them. But, yeah, I mean, this is what Washington needed to do. Unfortunately, it wasn't enough for us.
You know, it definitely was not. They've been my kryptonite, Oregon State, trying to figure them out from week to week. I seem to switch like, oh, they'll cover or they won't or whatever. But this one actually went, but they just play so much better at home. They had the close game, with Utah. They end up beating Cal in overtime at home. You know, their only Pac-12 win. And it's just like, okay, they're going to go on the road in Seattle and just struggle. And you saw the first half, and it was, you know, 5-0. And you're like, okay, so that's exactly what we expected, but then it just didn't, you know, Washington never put their foot on the gas after that and just kind of cruised in for the victory. Yeah, we're going to win. They'll just kind of cruise in. It's not that big of a deal. So it kind of, I guess it kind of went the way we thought it would, Dave, but there's, when you're talking about that many points, that now you're making decisions. Like there's people making decisions that are to like, do we need this? Do we need to score here? Do we not? What are we going to do? And Oregon State definitely played better in the second half, but it kind of like, you know, just felt weird watching this game. Like, man, come on, guys.
Yeah. Oh, for sure. That's a good way of putting it. This is the come on guys game.
Really? But this was really guys. Come on.
Yeah. I mean, I think Oregon State, you know, I wouldn't take a whole lot from this one if I was Oregon State because that's a tough one. But I think, yeah, there's still a couple of possible wins out there. Maybe. Yeah, I think there's still a couple of possible ones. I mean, I wouldn't sleep. I mean, we'll talk about this week. Wouldn't sleep on it. Weird game in Corvallis. But then they close with Arizona and Oregon. I mean, I think there's at least one win out there still for Oregon State. I think in aggregate, they're going to win one of these five. And going 3-9 this year with a couple of Pac-12 wins, that's a step up. That's nothing to sneer at.
All right. We got one more game. Should we jump to that one?
Let's jump to it.
And, there was a little controversy, after this one, Dave. Mike Leach, one of my favorite humans on the planet, Washington State. 37, ASU 32.
Yeah, so.
Pac-12 After Dark. On the Pac-12 Network.
Yeah, this was Pac-12 After Dark. So this one, yeah, the game was pretty much what you would have expected, except Washington State didn't cover like we expected. But while, you know, Washington State did some fun things offensively, ASU was able to shut down their running game for the most part, which was nice. I mean, that's, Washington State's running game is not a joke. But the after game stuff was the fun part. So Arizona State coach Todd Graham walks over to the, middle of the field, meets up with Mike Leach, and earlier in the week, last year there was reference to sign stealing, and then that was reiterated this year going into the game. And so Todd Graham goes over and calls him, what was that? Chicken shit?
Yeah.
Is that what he called him?
I think there was bullshit. I think there was chicken shit. I don't think there was any other kind of feces.
Was there horse shit?
I didn't hear horse shit, but there was, I think chicken and bull were the two that I had heard, I thought.
Okay. All right. Well, that, I mean, chicken and bull. I mean, you would think horse would be in there too.
Yeah. They're, it could have been.
We're talking, you know, all, you know, kind of vaguely ranch animals of some sort. Yeah, so that was fun. And then Leach responded to that by walking away with this sneer on his face and then going to the post-game press conference and basically answering no questions about Arizona State and dropping some line like, I'm not going to do this because I don't want to be publicly reprimanded and fined, because he was publicly reprimanded and fined earlier in the week for $10,000. But anyway, this game, you know, Arizona State, their quarterback situation is a disaster right now. Manny Wilkins tried to go a little bit in this one, but Dylan Sterling Cole, their true freshman, ran the offense for the majority of the time, and frankly, he's just not ready to play at this level. You know, it looks like he's, you know, he looks like a guy who was probably doing the scout team 3 weeks ago and is now kind of stuck running an offense that he hasn't necessarily learned a ton about yet. And he was 7 of 16 for 86 yards. Their run game, you know, really hasn't lived up to, I think, the potential of its two backs, and you can probably blame the offensive line for a lot of that, but Kalen Ballage and Demario Richard should be doing more than, what, 24 carries for 119 yards? I mean, that's just, you know, that's pretty pedestrian, and I think that both of those guys are too talented to be doing that.
Yeah, I thought at one point one of the notes I wrote, Dave, was, I think ASU has some managers out there playing quarterback. Like, I wasn't sure. Just there's rolling dudes out there, guys from the stands. It was rough. The fact that the game was this close, Washington State should have been won by a lot more. They did stupid stuff. Like they missed a PAT. There was a punt return for a touchdown and a crazy, 2-point conversion. If you remember the play, it was kind of weird.
Oh, yeah.
There was just a lot of weird kind of stuff. But then, you know, giving Arizona State credit late in the game, they were killing Falk. I mean, they were just coming after him. And the fact that it was close just was mind-boggling to me. And it was like, you know, but they were still covering the game. Like, Washington State was covering the entire time, basically. And then, late in the game, ASU kicks a field goal to bring it within under the spread. And I just knew at that point, I'm like, really? Like a meaningless field. You're not going for the touchdown. You're not trying to tie the game.
Mike McIntyre'd us.
So you were on the other end of that before. I was on the bad end of this twice now.
This time we were both on Washington State. Yeah.
Yeah. So I felt like enough, just like the other one, I felt like we were on the right side of this and they were covering the whole time, but there was just some weird shit that happened, not bull or chicken or whatever, just some weird stuff. And that stupid late field goal. And then we didn't cover.
Yep. That's, pretty much what happened. And, history will record us on the right side. We'll be on the right side of history.
I feel like we didn't like get this way wrong or anything, but that's just,
No, it wasn't like me saying that Utah UCLA was not going to be exciting. It wasn't like that.
No. But yeah, the after effects of this game are great. I've listened to other, like national, podcasts, not Pac-12 podcasts, just national ones. And pretty much everyone talked about it. It was, an important that and Joe Williams coming out of retirement to, run roughshod over UCLA, but just the post game and Mike Leach is so crazy awesome with that kind of stuff. And, I think I'm on his side on this. Like, I don't think you can in the middle of the field with cameras all over you. Like, I don't think you can, you know, say what you really want to say to Mike Leach. I think that's like a call or something later on. The fact that, you know, he tried to do that then just didn't make sense to me.
You're talking to a guy who covers Jim Mora, who makes a habit of doing fun things like that. That fun Kansas State bowl game was a lot of interesting stuff. But yeah, no, it's not the ideal place. Not the ideal place and time to air your grievances, vent your spleen.
So that was that was week 8. I'd mentioned our offensive, defensive players of the week and special teams players of the week last week, so I'll do it again.
Should I guess them?
Oh, yeah. You want to guess? Offense. Who do you think?
Offense, Joe Williams.
Yes. Very good. Joe Williams out of retirement, running for 300 whatever yards. For defense, who do you think?
Ooh, this could be a lot of guys. I don't want to pick another guy from that game, but Karis McKinley could have been in the conversation.
He could have been. It was Tedrick Thompson.
That makes sense.
He had two picks, well. I believe, right?
Yeah. Special teams. Are we talking Tim White for special teams?
It was, that same game, but the other side, Robert Taylor, on the winning side. Wait a second. Did I get that right? No, from Washington State, Robert Taylor. Sorry about that.
I was doing Tim White from Arizona State.
Okay. Yeah. Robert Taylor. I got confused there for a second.
I know. You talked yourself out of it, and then you talked yourself back into it.
And it was, okay, Tedrick Thompson from Colorado, not from Utah. Sorry, Utah was with Joe Williams. So Tedrick Thompson is the DB from Colorado, had a couple picks, I think 5 solo tackles.
You don't need to call him a DB. That's not nice.
That's not nice?
That's not nice. That's
nice. Robert Taylor, who's also a defensive back, but he returns kicks. He had a kickoff return for Washington State for a touchdown, which I believe is their first – since 2003. Don't quote me on it, but I believe that's, that was a big special teams play for Washington State.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. Well, cool. Let's preview the games.
Awesome. So we want to do our
Pac-12 roundup.
All right. I'm excited. Get to use my board. We get to talk some games. So we're going to do as normal. We're going to reveal our, podcast of champions power rankings, in reverse. And so we'll start at the bottom, work our way up, we want to reveal the highest ranked teams last is basically what we're trying to do here.
Exactly.
Thanks.
Right.
Thanks to one of our callers. So first we have number 9.
UCLA Bruins.
And they're on a bye, Dave. So I don't know if you want to, is that good? Is a good week for a bye for UCLA?
I mean, in as much as there is a good week for a bye at this point, I mean, they're 3-5 with, I mean, even if they won out, there's such a weird scenario where they would have even a chance at winning the Pac-12 South that, I mean, they're basically not playing for anything anymore. So, yeah, I guess it's nice to have a bye so they can get Rosen potentially healthy, but yeah, the season is already pretty much a failure. So that was my cheerful update on the UCLA Bruins for all of you.
Very cheerful, Dave. Wow. All right. Okay. So that was number 9. Number 8, we have
Stanford Cardinals.
T- taking on, going to Tucson, Arizona, to take on number 12.
Arizona Wildcats.
All right, so this is the battle of two teams that have been, I would say both have been varying degrees of disappointing this year. Stanford, 4-3, going at Arizona, 8 p.m. on Fox Sports 1. So this is actually the final game of Saturday night. But we do this in our own special order, and you guys can all live with it. Stanford is favored by 5.5 points. So Stanford last week was not able to generate much against Colorado, but Colorado probably, you know, if you go by statistical metrics, they might have the second best defense in the Pac-12. So while Stanford's offense hasn't been good, it's probably not 3 offensive points bad. So Arizona's defense, on the other hand, is not good at all. If ever there was a game for Stanford and Christian McCaffrey to actually have a better performance, it would be this one. You know, they played a not good defense against Notre Dame, but Arizona's orders of magnitude worse. So I think Stanford has a decent chance to generate some offense here. And the thing is, Stanford's defense is still pretty good. I think Arizona, with all their quarterback issues, you know, I don't know. I don't think Brandon Dawkins is going to be ready to go for this one. Maybe he will be, but I think it's going to probably be Khalil Tate again. Sounds about right. And if it is, I could see Stanford really putting the screws to him. So I think I like Stanford to cover here. I think I like them probably by 7-10. I just don't think they're going to score all that much, so I don't think it's going to be a huge blowout, but I think I like them to cover the 5.5.
Yeah, I agree with you. I was thinking, if before you said the line, I was like, anything under 7, I think I'll take Stanford, so this definitely falls in that. Now, Arizona did have a bye, so a little bit of time to kind of try to get healthy. Certainly a team that's been really, really banged up. And, you know, I got to see them, you know, they lost pretty good to USC in week 7. It just seemed like, Dave, to me, this was a team that it was going to be tough to kind of recover, and get back and start playing good football with just so many injuries. There's so many things that's not been going Arizona's way. So,
you know, I said something very ignorant. I'm looking at the week off report now, and it sounds like Brandon Dawkins and Anu Solomon are both back and competing for the job this week. So they might have a little bit more quarterback health.
Okay.
So I don't know if that sways me back in their favor, but it could make this game a little bit more interesting. I think I'm still going to pick Stanford, but maybe Arizona will be able to generate a little bit more offensively than we thought.
That's certain. I mean, you hope that this team is closer to full strength. They just haven't been for a while. So that'll be good. For me, it's more about Stanford. I know it's going to be on the road. But I just feel like this is a game that Stanford needs. They need to kind of get back to things. You know, David Shaw, sometimes you see his back to the wall like that and he's able to bounce back. I just kind of feel it'll be a little bit of a bounce back game for Stanford. So I'll still take, you know, given the way the 5.5, I'll take Stanford as well, Dave.
Yeah. And I looked at some of the like advanced stat projections. I think I was looking at the ESPN FPI or FDI or whatever they have. And they're favored. They would be favored to win in every one of their remaining games. So Stanford, even though it might be playing the same football, they're playing a worse schedule over the final 5 games than they did over the previous 5. So they have a decent chance of finishing probably in the 4-1 range. I think that would be really reasonable, and it's a not insignificant chance of finishing 5-0. So, you know, given that this is effectively turning out to be a rebuilding year for Stanford, that's pretty great.
All right. Well, let's move on. We have our number 7 team here, Dave.
Arizona State Sun Devils.
And the number 11 team. Just weird to see this team down here.
Oregon Ducks.
Yeah, so this one's going to be interesting. It's 2 p.m. on the Pac-12 Network. Arizona State going at Eugene. Not quite as intimidating as it used to be, but still at Eugene. So Arizona State's 5-3. 2-3 in the Pac-12. Oregon, as we talked about earlier, is 2-5, 0-4 in the Pac-12. Oregon is favored by 8 points.
Wow. Oh, man.
So that leads me to believe a few things. You know, the eye test with Arizona State hasn't been super compelling for many weeks now. They just don't look like a team that necessarily matches their record. They look more like a, say, 3-5 team. But the thing is, Oregon doesn't look like much else but a 2-5 team. Like, they don't, it's not like they're looking like they're way better than their record. They look like what their record says they are. So I'm not sure I get this 8-point line. Arizona State's run D is actually pretty good. You know, they can shut down a rushing attack. Their secondary is bad, like very bad. But I'm not sure if, I mean, Justin Herbert's a true freshman. I'm not sure he's going to be able to put together just the consistent passing attack necessary to really blow this one out. And Arizona State offensively is nothing great, but Oregon defensively is very bad. So I keep talking myself into this, and I'm not liking it because I keep telling myself Arizona State, maybe they'll cover, but I think I'll take Arizona State here. I mean, I don't think they're very good, but I don't think it's a great matchup for Oregon. I kind of don't get the 8 points here, so I'm going to take Arizona State.
The 8 points is baffling to me, but I'm still, that's where I'm gravitating towards. I'm gravitating towards Oregon covering this game at home. I mean, we saw them put up 49 points on the road at Cal. Is this the game that Oregon breaks through and gets their Pac-12 win? It's like, not only would it be their first Pac-12 win, but they got to cover more than a touchdown. Like, it's kind of crazy. But so I think either way, whatever I pick, I'd be baffling. It'd be baffling to me. Like, am I picking Arizona State on the road in Eugene, or I'm picking Oregon to cover 8 points at home and they haven't won a Pac-12 game yet? But I think I'll do. I think I'll go opposite you, Dave. I think I'll take Oregon. The Ducks have won the last nine against ASU, but I think they've had that stat against like three or four other teams this year that went out the window. I think I'll take Oregon at home. I think they bust through. They scored a lot of points last week. I think they maybe figure it out a little bit more this week.
So the last home game Oregon won was against UVA in the second game of the season. They lost to Colorado and Washington at home. Washington by 49 points.
Yeah, that wasn't pretty.
Yeah.
Luckily, Arizona State is not Washington.
Their run defense, though, it's far better than Cal's. Their run defense can absolutely give Oregon fits. So, yeah, and this will be a fun one. This will be one I'm watching closely now because we are on opposite ends.
Yeah, and that, I mean, I like I said, when we talked about the Oregon, I thought that Oregon just ran the ball effectively in that game. And, you know, I think that's kind of what helped the freshman quarterback go a little bit. You know, if you have a good running game, I think that helps out a lot. So if Arizona State's able to take that away, does he struggle more? Does he throw picks? I don't know, but I don't know. Yeah, I like that we're going opposite on this one. This is a really weird line. I don't think it's where I wouldn't give up this many points if you told me ahead of time if I had to pick a line. I think like it's closer to a pick'em or something. I just got a gut feeling, so I'm going with it, Dave.
Yeah, it makes sense. I mean, I think Manny Wilkins is still probably uncertain for this one, so yeah, you could be right. You could be right.
Well, could be wrong. You could be right. We'll see.
Yeah, no, there are so many possibilities in life, so we're just going to go with what we go with.
Okay, so let's go our next game. We have number 5.
Washington State Cougars.
Traveling to Corvallis to take on number 10.
Oregon State Beavers.
All right, so this game's on at 7:45 on ESPN2 in Corvallis. So Washington State 5-2 going at Oregon State 2-5. Washington State's favored by 13.5, and I'm going to tell you this right now. I'm picking Oregon State. I do not have a tactical reason for it whatsoever. But I know Washington State is prone to just weird games, and I think this could easily be a weird game in Corvallis at night. Oregon State's defense is not horrible. And I think they're going to cover this 13.5. It feels like they will.
Yeah.
That's the amount of my analysis on this one.
100% agree. I'm just saying that Oregon State's able to lose close games at home and usually lose not close games on the road. This is at home. Washington State can be weird. They could score a whole bunch of points, but I just kind of get the feeling this will be, who knows? The weather could be crazy. Monsoon. Who knows? I don't know what's going to happen. But yeah, that's a lot of points for Washington State to have to beat Oregon State on the road. So same sort of thing. I'm trying to go with my theories on Oregon State. They'll keep it close at home. So give me 13.5 and give me the Beavs.
Yeah, absolutely. Go Beavs. And you know what? I wouldn't completely rule out the possibility of weird upset. Wouldn't rule it out.
Yeah.
Not ruling it out. I think Oregon State Their defense plays well enough. I mean, obviously Washington, you throw that out the window because Washington's a world beater right now. But I think they can, you know, limit Washington State's run game, force them to be one dimensional, and then, you know, if they get a few weird things to happen, could be a lot of fun.
All right. So Oregon State, I've not figured you out yet. I'm trying. And yeah. We'll see. But it's funny that Dave and I both came to the same thing. Like, I think that's what's going to happen. So we'll see. That pretty much means Mike Leach, they're just going to
go. Is going to win by about 7 touchdowns.
So sorry, Beavs, if we jinxed you or whatever, but we believe in you right now. I haven't believed in you a whole lot this year, but at home, I think you can keep it close. That's one thing you showed me is you're able to keep it close at home. So we're going to go with that. Next up, number 4.
Colorado Buffalo.
And they take on nobody because they got a bye. So, top 4 Buffs. They get to relax a little bit, Dave.
Yeah, it's nice. Yeah. They're already bowl eligible. So that's a thing. But I think they obviously have bigger goals in mind. And they'll get UCLA, next Thursday, which a lot of people thought, you know, 3 or 4 weeks ago that would be a big game in the Pac-12 South. But now it's just another game on Colorado's march to 9 wins or 10 wins.
Wow, we'll see. All right. So Colorado and UCLA both have a bye. They play each other.
Yeah, next Thursday.
Okay, so that's interesting. Oh, that's a Thursday game. Okay.
Yeah.
All right, so we have, number 3.
USC Trojans.
Hosting on a Thursday tomorrow night, because we're taping this on Wednesday. Number 6.
California Golden Bears.
All right, so this game is on at 7:30 p.m. on ESPN. So this is in L.A. at the Coliseum. USC is favored by 16.5, which is that's a very big line. Now, I should say USC is, if I was grading qualitatively and not based on record right now, they might be the second best looking team in the Pac-12 right now. If you're just looking at the eye test, you throw out all the records, you throw out anything that happened before the beginning of, last week. USC just looks like they're playing great football. Sam Darnold looks great. He looks like he's been playing for, a couple of years already, and he's still in his first year. Obviously a few turnovers, but their defense is playing pretty well. But 16.5 is a lot. And Cal's got an explosive offense. They have Davis Webb, who's a very, very good quarterback, even with a slightly banged up hand. And again, their run game is not bad. You have to respect it. It's not like Cal teams of years past where you could just, play a bunch of coverage or blitz a quarterback or whatever it is, because they'll burn you a little bit with the run game. So, I think USC is going to win this one fairly comfortably. But I don't think they're winning at 16.5 points comfortably. I think Cal's going to be able to muster enough offensively, especially because it's USC. And USC, after a bye week, always feels like a team that maybe kind of took its foot off the gas a little bit. And this is just historically, it always feels like that. They're not necessarily a team that comes out looking like they're, world beaters coming out of a bye week. So I think this could be like a 10 to 14 point win for USC, but I don't see it as like 17 to whatever. 24. That just seems seems like a big win, and I don't necessarily see that here.
I agree with you 100%. So Cal's defense is pretty bad. We've seen that a lot of times, but I don't think USC's offense is the kind that takes advantage of that as much. Like, if Cal's defense was better, they could, USC's offense would probably still do about the same amount that they would do. It's like they're going to score in the 30s probably, I just don't see them. You play a bad defense for this USC offense, you don't start scoring 50 points. It's still like, did you score 28 or did you score 35? Like, it just seems like you can do a little bit more. They'll stop themselves every once in a while. So to give up, if you're saying, like, if I'm thinking USC scores like 35 points, are you really holding Cal, to 19 or whatever? I just don't see that happening. Like, Cal's going to score enough. I think USC will win the game. And maybe it's by 7 or 10 or something like that. I just don't see it by that many. I just think USC would have to score a whole lot of points to cover that big of a spread. And like I said, I just don't see that happening, Dave.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's we're kind of in the same boat. I mean, it could happen. I mean, USC is playing, I think, playing really good football right now. Offensively, though, they just haven't. I mean, even the game, what game was that they just played? Even the Arizona game, they scored 48 points, but I thought they still kind of just weren't quite kicking it into fifth gear offensively. There's still a few missed opportunities. Against Colorado, there sure were. So I think they're still maybe figuring things out a little bit offensively, and I think that could allow Cal to kind of stay around for a little bit longer.
Cal has lost 7 straight road games, and Clay Helton is undefeated at home as USC's head coach, so you know we'll see kind of what happens there. USC's really dominated the series. They've won 12 straight and 14 of the last 15 against Cal. And I was telling you off the air, Dave, I was watching Pac-12 Network, and they had the 2003 Cal game, which is when USC ended up losing to Cal in triple overtime. And then they won 34 straight games after that. And then they showed the next year where Aaron Rodgers completed 23 straight passes and USC ended up beating them at the end. But even those games, you know, talented USC teams were close with Cal. So I just don't see this team, you know, they could happen, but I think it's more than likely that they're not going to, they'll win, but not likely by, you know, 17 points or whatever.
Yeah, for sure. For sure.
Okay. So that's, USC and Cal. That's the Thursday night game on, what's it? That one's on ESPN, right?
Yeah. That one is on ESPN.
Okay.
At 7:30.
7:30, yeah. So it's a little easier to get to if you're in Los Angeles, 7:30 versus 6 o'clock. And then the game of the week, the number one game we're talking about here. We have our number one team.
Washington Huskies.
Taking on our number two team in the all-encompassing podcast of champions power rankings.
Utah Utes.
Yeah, so this one's going to be a lot of fun, and it's an early-ish game. 12:30 p.m. on Fox Sports 1 in Salt Lake, Washington, favored by 10 over Utah. But it's going to be, I mean, Vegas is predicting a defensive struggle. 52 points is the over-under, so this will likely finish somewhere in the 59-45 range, I would guess. So Washington's 7-0 coming into this one. Utah is 7-1. You know, Washington got kind of a tune-up game going into this one. Utah had much more of a struggle. I don't know how much that plays into it, but there's, you know, some element of that. Utah's still pretty banged up defensively. I don't think Marcus Williams, their kind of star safety, is going to be back. They've had some injuries just kind of across the board at linebacker, along the defensive line going back to the beginning of the year. Washington, on the other hand, is a very healthy team, kind of firing on all cylinders offensively, defensively, the whole deal. I don't like betting against Utah at all. I really, really don't like it. I really don't like betting against them not to cover either. But I think Washington's just playing at a much higher level than anyone else in the Pac-12. You know, the one thing to watch here is Utah's pass rush. They weren't able to generate a ton against UCLA last week, despite the fact that UCLA, you know, dropped back 70 times. If they can rattle Jake Browning, you know, all bets are off, but I'm not sure I see it. I think Utah's maybe just a little bit banged up, and I think Washington's a pretty clear cut above the rest of the Pac-12. I think I like Washington to cover. Not necessarily by a ton, but I think I like them by, like, 2 touchdowns.
I'm right along with you on this one, Dave. 10 points is a lot on the road. But I think this is going to be a game that Troy Williams struggles a little bit against this Washington defense. And I just feel that Washington's going to be able to just kind of stretch it out a little bit and be able to just kind of blitzkrieg Utah on the road and kind of start on them early and then just keep pounding on them and like maybe even win by more points than they did against Oregon State last week. Like that sort of thing. I just kind of feel they're going to get in a roll here on the road and just start going. And, you know, I know Joe Williams come out of retirement, but I did some research, Dave. Chris Peterson, there's like 3 different lawsuits from the AARP against Chris Peterson for some of his practices. So, hiring practices and things like that. He's not fond of retired people. So I think
and he's not fazed by it. You know, he's already had 3 lawsuits. He's not fazed by retirees at all.
Right. So I just think the Joe Williams factor, like he was great against UCLA, probably have a good game against Washington, but I don't think he's going to have a great game. And I think Troy Williams is going to struggle. And I think Joe Williams plays good, but not great. And that's just going to be tough for Utah in this one.
Yeah, and I think a lot of the stuff Utah was doing on the interior, Washington will now have it scouted out. You know, they were doing some tricky stuff with their run game a little bit. Obviously, they physically dominated UCLA, but they were doing some tricky stuff with their run game as well. Washington will probably have that scouted out a little bit better, and they've got a better defensive line than anyone else in the Pac-12. So I think they'll be able to limit Utah's running game. I really like Joe Williams. He's super fast. I think he's going to get his, but it's not going to be 332 yards of his. And, you know, I think Washington's just a much, much more complete, much healthier, much more balanced team. I hate picking against the Utes. They've shown this year that they have that kind of will to win games. You know, I always hate saying stuff like that because it's corny and stupid, but they've shown this year, but they just kind of, you know, they don't look great, and then they pull it out. And I just don't see it in this one. I think Washington's just a little bit too good and too balanced.
All right, so that's our picks and our previews of Week 9. We got our buddy Nick. You want me to read his recap?
Sure.
And he mentions a topic I wanted to bring up, but we'll for this that final Utah-Washington game, but he brings it up, so we'll just talk about it then. He said, "Hi, Nick from Cyprus, with a quick rundown and questions. First Thursday night, no defense game, Oregon versus Oregon 49, Cal 52 in two overtimes." That was Friday night, right? Yeah, that was Friday.
Right.
OSU 17 versus Washington 41, no surprise. OSU not good, UW good. Okay, that's good analysis. Utah 52 versus UCLA 45. Is Utah's running backs stopped running yet? LOL. Wow, UCLA's fallen off. Colorado 10, Stanford 5. Was this a baseball game? 5 points. LOL. Washington State 37. We could do our podcast way quicker if we did it this way, Dave.
Oh, yeah, this is better.
Washington State 37, ASU 32. I love Mike Leach. He just wins in the Pac-12. Hope WSU fans appreciate him, unlike Texas Tech fans didn't. His question statement, since College Game Day will be at Utah this coming Saturday, I'm calling it that they will beat Washington. Your thoughts? Well, we just picked against that. And what happened to Stanford, Oregon, and UCLA? All were picked to, at worst, win their divisions, and all three are garbage now. Last, why don't you guys praise Mike Leach and WSU for what they have done the last few years? Winning at WSU isn't easy, and he does it. Fight on and beat the Bears, from our buddy Nick.
All right. So first, you know, what happened to all three of those teams? All right. Let's go through it. Stanford, I would say offensive line is my first issue, with a slight helping of quarterback, right?
Yeah. They miss Kevin Hogan.
They miss Kevin Hogan for sure. You know, Ryan Burns hasn't been great. So I think Stanford, that's really the issue. And it doesn't help that I think their offensive scheme is kind of inflexible. When they don't have the pieces, it kind of falls apart. So they need to have those pieces, and they don't have them this year. I think next year will probably look a little bit better. UCLA, made the baffling, insane decision to go to a pro-style offense without the personnel to do so. And that's been the limiting factor on them this year. Their defense, until this last game, is probably the best defense that UCLA's had under Jim Mora, but their offense is straight garbage. And then, Oregon? Was Oregon the last one?
Yeah, Oregon.
I mean, Oregon's defense is just trash again, and their offense isn't as good without Vernon Adams. So that's pretty much what it is. Their offense hasn't been able to carry them this year the way it has in years past, and their defense is just as bad, if not worse, than it was last year.
Yeah, I think it was a good effort to try bring in Brady Hoke and help the defense, but also you got to go with a quarterback you recruited and let him learn and grow. You can't just keep doing the 1 year deal. So at least they've given that up. So maybe bright future for Oregon there as well. We'll see.
Yeah.
We talked about Washington. Nick's calling the upset. We both did not pick the upset. And then I think we praised Mike Leach. They've done great stuff. The problem we have is that Mike Leach loses those FCS games early. It just makes, if he goes undefeated in the Pac-12, it makes the conference look terrible because he lost to Boise State and Eastern Washington to start. And then he goes, you know, wipes out the rest of the Pac-12. That means the rest of the Pac-12 by the transitive property, which doesn't work in college football, but we use it all the time. You know, Eastern Washington could win the Pac-12. So that's not what you want to see.
Yeah, exactly. And their special teams were very bad until very recently, and now they're just like not good. So I never like teams that have just awful special teams. That just rubs me the wrong way, and I usually see that as a reflection on the head coach. Lack of attention to detail and that sort of thing.
Okay, we got one more, Dave. Zach from New York City. New York City. Said, hey, Dave and Ryan, I'll get right to the point since neither of you can really make harsh commentary on the programs you cover without some sort of professional backlash.
Does he listen to this podcast?
Isn't that, that's all we do. Like,
I get so much crap from UCLA fans for the like dark and awful things I say about UCLA.
Yeah. Well, so we're, you know, Zach, we are allowed to say derogatory things about the programs we cover, and we probably do it more just because we know those teams better. And so when it's going bad, we usually talk worse than it actually is, you know, so.
Yeah. Well, we probably do it more than is reasonably necessary.
All right. So he said, I decided to mix it up. So Dave, you are named the athletic director at USC tomorrow. What are the first three things you're going to do to make them nationally dominant again? And then for me, Ryan, you're named the AD at UCLA tomorrow. What are the first three things you're doing to make the program nationally relevant?
Wow. You want me to go first? Or do you want to go first?
Go ahead. You can, or either one. I'm not sure what I would do. So.
Here's what I would do. This is kind of what I would do as the AD in any situation, is you immediately, if you're USC, your goal is to win national championships, right? So you have to assess things. Is this coach who I have right now going to win a national championship? Not is he going to be pretty good. Is he going to be good enough that I don't have to fire him and I don't have to work hard, but is he going to win a national championship? And I'd look at Clay Helton, and, you know, I wouldn't just fire him out of hand. I'd interview him, interview some people around him, interview some people who are third parties to the situation, and they can assess things from afar and they can give me a reasonable, you know, third party viewpoint on it. And then I'd probably end up firing him, because likely he's not going to win a national championship at USC. So, and that's my own personal assessment. He might, but I think he's, even if he ends up a good coach, he's still very much learning on the job. So I don't think that's a great place to learn on the job. So I'd fire him. And then the next thing I would do is put in calls to all of the elite upcoming coaches in the country, you know, starting with Tom Herman, but going to even guys who've already gotten jobs who are, you know, elite coaches. Justin Fuente at Virginia Tech. You put in a call, see if he wants to come, and hire one of those guys. So that's really two things, but I think those are the two most important things for the AD to do.
All right. For me, let's see. So I think the same sort of thing. It's a different situation at UCLA because Jim Moore has been around for a while, but there's a lot of rumblings, a lot of fans that are upset. So I think kind of getting the boosters and stuff together and kind of figuring out what the sentiment is. Is it something that, is he tired of being there? Or what we're going to do. So I think if you want to make a big splash, it's pretty much you have to fire the coach, right? And, So I probably would do that. Not that I'm saying that Jim Moore deserves to be fired or anything, but like that's, if I'm coming in there and I want to try to mix things up, you kind of work something out there. And I think I'm trying to get if you're UCLA, a lot of the times, at least from my perspective, it seems like there's a lot of focus on beating USC, and, you know, and the fans love it. And that's what you want to be able to do. But I think to try to focus more on, you know, winning the Pac-12 and being nationally relevant and making sure that everyone's on board to, hey, you're going to be able to pay assistance. Let's bring in a big name, an offensive name, because we want to be entertaining. We want to, who was the, God, why am I blanking on his name? Joe Toledo. Bob Toledo. Sorry, Joe Toledo. Bob Toledo. Like, his offenses were so fun. Like, someone like that, like, even if you lose, it's fun. I guess it was fun against, Utah the other day, but I think bring in a big name, as big as name you can, offensive coach, because you're getting, people want to, like, national pundits want to pick UCLA to go to the playoff. They want UCLA's talented enough team, top 10, top 15 recruiting classes every year. They want them to be good. So I think you just need to be able to embrace that and bring in a fun, offensive-minded kind of coach and do that. And I think one of the other things you do is make sure the basketball team's relevant again, too, because that brings more national prominence as well. That's where the fans get involved. If the basketball team's bad, sometimes it's hard to get everyone excited. You know, if the basketball team's winning and you get some success in football, it kind of feeds off itself. So I think that's the kind of main things I would do.
So we both want to fire the opposing team. Out of the goodness of our hearts, not because we don't like the guy.
Right. I don't think Moore is getting fired. I don't, like, Helton could have been. I don't think he's.
There's no way they're firing Helton now because they're probably going to go 4-1 down the stretch.
Yeah,
there's
just
no way.
Now, if he doesn't, you know, maybe something happens there.
Yeah, I would really doubt it with Moore too. I mean, even if they completely crater and they go like 4-8 or even, I mean, nuclear scenario and they lose out, even losing to Oregon State, I'm having a hard time seeing it. So as it stands though, I saw this stat on Twitter, or I didn't see this stat on Twitter. I tweeted this stat out on Twitter, after I was doing a little bit of research for a thing I was writing. Jim Mora and Carl Durrell, if you count the Pac-12 championship loss to Stanford in Mora's first year, they have the exact same Pac-12 record. Carl Durrell was 24-18, and Jim Mora is 24-17 regular season and 24-18 overall in the Pac-12.
I would have never guessed Carl Durrell was 24-18.
Yeah, that was actually the really baffling one, because I knew, you know, Mora's record had kind of suffered the last year-ish, but if I was really thinking about it, I would have said, oh, Durrell was pretty much 500 his entire career here, so I'd have him at about 500. I was kind of shocked that he was 6 games over.
I did no idea. I would have guessed maybe under. Like, I did not know.
Well, I knew he was the king of 6-6, so I just figured it, because I knew he lost also a decent amount of non-cons, so I was figuring he was about 500, but
okay.
You got to factor in that weird 10-2 year. You got to factor it in. It's got to be thrown in there.
And, you know, you mentioned, that is a great stat. And then one more thing, you mentioned, Tom Herman, and I've had people tweet me, some really weird people kind of tweet me about this, but we got a question I got in my email box, and it was Mike, in Dallas. He said, this could be for USC or the Podcast of Champions. So I don't know. You can't just send me a question and say you don't know which podcast it's for, but I thought we could talk about it here. So with the roller coaster of a season, in college football, is Tom Herman's stock dropping fast or not? What do you think, he had another thing, but that was USC related. So what do you think about Tom Herman's stock? Cause he lost to, Navy and lost to SMU here.
I don't put much stock in it at all. I think he's still very clearly one of the hottest up and coming names in college football. I think what he did last year, who'd they beat in that bowl game, Florida State, doing that last year, coming out this year and beating Oklahoma. I like to see coaches who beat teams that are much more talented than them with less talent. I think that's a mark of good coaching. And, you know, in the same way, the college football playoff is about who you beat, not who you lost to. That's the metric they're really looking at. He's beaten some pretty darn good teams. And yeah, you know, you're going to have weird games where you lose to SMU at any school, you know, lose to the SMUs of the world. I mean, but, he's beaten some real teams, and I think, you know, everything I know about his offense, about what he did at Ohio State, at all these places, I think he's not necessarily a can't miss, but he's the closest thing out there right now.
He is, and I don't
like up and coming guys, in terms of, you know, not Nick Saban, not Urban Meyer, but in terms of that next tier of guys who have not yet won a national championship, I think he's the closest thing.
And, you know, and I think when you look at it, comes after the Big 12, which they thought Houston was going to get into, did not, so. Is there like is everyone just kind of down after that? Like, okay, so, and the players kind of know, okay, well, he's gone, you know, and I think there's other factors there. He didn't get dumb, you know. I think there's a reason why, you know, he's turned Houston around so quickly. If you lose a couple games, I don't think it's that big of a deal. They might not even win their division now, but it wasn't, you know, if he went 12-0 and made the playoff, was he that much? I mean, it'd be an amazing accomplishment, but just what he's done so far has been amazing. I think Texas will most likely, fire Charlie Strong and most likely hire, Tom Herman. It would be interesting to see if LSU, Texas, and USC were all open and they were all vying, to get him. I still think Texas would probably have the edge. But there's, I just think at this point now it's going to be Texas, but I have people tweeting me, Dave, like, oh, they're backing off. They're blah, blah, blah. And I asked the Texas people, like, no, that's not okay. That's who they want. And I think that's who they're going to get.
Most likely.
All right. Well, good stuff, Dave. We were a little long this one. Where did we go? Ooh, hour and 15 minutes, man. Yeah. But a lot of good topics. And we got the, you know, number one versus number two this week, Dave. So it's a big one.
It's very exciting. Very exciting times. It'll be a fun week of football.
It definitely will be. So I hope you guys all enjoy your weekend, week nine in the Pac-12. That is David Woods. Does an amazing job over there, bro. BruinReportOnline.com. I'm Ryan Abraham. I do a mediocre job on USC Football.
You do an amazing job at USCFootball.com.
Well, thanks, man. Appreciate that. So check us out. Podcast of Champions, Pac-12Podcast.com. You want to check out all our old episodes. Listen to stupid stuff we said and then email us later on after the fact and get it wrong like our buddy did. But still, we call ourselves out all the time. You can call us out too. Hope you guys enjoyed this episode of the Podcast of Champions, and we will talk to you next time.